Hey guys, this is Albert. A little bit of a different look this week, of course, because of Christmas. We're on Thursday and not Wednesday, and Jenny and Connor are out, so this will be a solo podcast. I'm going to take you guys through all the coaching rumors. I'm going to take you guys through Week 17, and then, as always, we'll wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, Christmas is in the books. Week 16 is in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, and we're going to sound a little bit different this week because of the holiday. I wasn't able to make it down to New York. Lots of moving pieces this week, obviously, with all of the stuff going on the coaching carousel and week 17 on tap. And so what I'm going to do, we're going to give you a solo podcast this week. Jenny and Connor are going to be back next week. And what I want to give you guys is what you want to have, which is information this time of year. And so here's how we're going to set it up. All right. This is the special week 17 edition of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're going to start with five things I'm hearing about the coaching market. Then we're going to talk about five things that I'm looking forward to in week 17. And then we'll wrap it up, as we always do, with the six pack of your Twitter questions. And so I want to start with the coaching market. Obviously, a lot of fans out there, your team may be out of it. You may be looking to see what the next step is, getting excited about some of the candidates out there. So I want to give you guys just a feel for what's going on inside these buildings, over those phone lines, as teams get ready to make changes. The number one thing that I think is sort of an overarching thing when it comes to the 2019 coaching market, I think there stands to be a chance that some coaches get a stay of execution. And to explain to you why, I'm going to explain what happened in Baltimore over the course of the last couple of months. At one point, it did look like there was going to be some sort of mutual parting of the ways between the Ravens and John Harbaugh. Obviously, there's a transition of power going on there. The new general manager will be Eric DaCosta after two decades of Ozzie Newsome in charge. John Harbaugh is going into a contract year in 2019, and they had made the playoffs 3 years in a row. So what changed? Well, for one thing, they started winning, and that certainly has an impact on all of this. Here's the other thing that happened. The owner, Steve Bisciotti, started to look out at the landscape and started to listen to what was happening out there. And what was happening out there was, very quickly, John Harbaugh was becoming the number one name among other teams that were doing research on their coaches. And so Steve Bisciotti sat down and said to himself, okay, I'm looking at a job market that is pretty bare. Like, if you want to look at what's out there, and remember, this is a guy who made his fortune in staffing, looks out there and sees a coaching pipeline that's running pretty dry at this point because there's been so much change, 7 to 8 changes a year over the course of the 8 years of the new CBA. And he says to himself, okay, so if we're going to move on from John Harbaugh, then what? And if we move on from John Harbaugh, what's going to happen to John Harbaugh? Well, John Harbaugh is going to get snapped up in 2 seconds. In fact, there's going to be competition for John Harbaugh's services. And so he took a logical look at this and says to himself, well, I can fire John Harbaugh or separate from John Harbaugh, and then we're moving forward into this abyss, competing with other teams where demand for coaches does not match supply in this particular market, or I can go forward and try to make it work with John Harbaugh. They start winning games. That feeling gets stronger. I think probably people in that organization got a little sick of hearing their sitting head coach's name as the number one candidate out there on the market. And so they made the decision that at the very least, if someone's going to come get John Harbaugh, it's not going to come for free. They're going to have to pay for it. At best, I think that the hope is that there is some sort of agreement where they can go forward with the relationship. And John Harbaugh holds some of the cards there. I mean, look, there are a lot of teams out there that I think would love to have John Harbaugh as the coach. I mentioned the Jets. The Broncos would very much be in that market, potentially with Gary Kubiak as the offensive coordinator. And so now John Harbaugh has to make a decision. His leverage right now, well, I don't need to sign an extension. So if he doesn't want to be there, if he wanted to move on from Baltimore, he could sit there and he could say, you know what? I'm going to take my chances. I'll go into 2019 in a contract year. We'll play out the year, and then I'll be free next year. Then maybe the Ravens get their hand forced. I'm not saying it's going to come to that. It's just it's something that could happen, certainly. And if you want to look at the other teams that potentially could have openings, we know the Packers have one. We know the Browns have one, the Jets, the Bengals, the Jaguars, the Broncos, the Bucks, the Cardinals. All these teams are looking out at this landscape, and I think that there is an element in every one of these buildings of, is what we're going to be bringing in so much better than what we'd be going out and getting? Because if you go out and get somebody new, and you're not wild, like if you make the decision you're going to go out and get somebody new, you're basically restarting the clock on your organization. And so if you're not all that excited about what's out there, like what you could potentially go and get, sometimes it might make sense to say, like, I mean, if you're Tampa, say, like, it might make sense to say, unless we're really sure, like, maybe it's actually worth just sitting on this for a year, letting our head coach see if he can win, and then making a decision after that. It's just where the market is right now. So I think there will be some stay of execution situations in the NFL. Maybe one, maybe two. We've already seen one in Baltimore with John Harbaugh. I think that that train of thought has come into the heads of some of the upper management types across the NFL. Okay, number two. I think one thing we do know now is the Miami Dolphins are going to have some level of change. And I don't believe Steve Ross knows to which level it's going to go yet. Okay, John Harbaugh absolutely would have been on their radar. That one comes off the table now, at least theoretically. For right now, let's move that off the table. Okay, looks like Mike Tannenbaum, the EVP of football operations, is going to be gone. Now, one scenario, which this has been rumored for a few months now, okay, is that they take Chris Greer and they sort of elevate him. Even though he's already got the general manager title, they elevate him and they keep Adam Gase as coach. Okay, another scenario is that they fire everybody. I don't think that's happening. And then a third scenario, they hire someone to replace Tannenbaum. And this just bears watching, because I think if Greer's back, then Gase is probably back. But if they try to hire someone over the top and they want to get somebody, say, like a George Payton from the Vikings, right, to get the level of executive that I think they'd want to get for that role, they would have to give him some power. And Adam Gase has the 53 contractually. So this is a question that's being asked out there, okay? If the 53 were to come off the table for Adam, would Adam try to push his way out? Because he is another guy like Harbaugh who would garner interest across the NFL. He is a guy who I believe would be in play in Cleveland, among other places. Cleveland, you may remember, interviewed him before he was a hot name. He came at the recommendation of Peyton Manning, who's very close, with Jimmy Haslam. And he really likes Baker Mayfield. So just something to think about there. The Dolphins will have some level of change. I think they may be the most interesting situation out there, and that there are all these moving parts, and potentially, you could have a head coach who has a little bit of a wandering eye there. Question, okay, number three. I think that this job market is unique as well. And we talked about how the pool of candidates isn't that attractive. Well, I think the pool of jobs actually is attractive, okay? How often is it that you've got two highly drafted, well-thought-of young quarterbacks teams on the market? And I'm talking about the Browns and the Jets, okay? Both those teams have very, very promising young quarterbacks. The Jets have Sam Darnold. The Browns have Baker Mayfield. Both those teams have some good young talent outside of that. The Browns have guys like Myles Garrett, Larry Ogunjobi, Denzel Ward, Jarvis Landry. The Jets have Leonard Williams, Marcus May, Jamal Adams. And both those teams have a lot of money to spend. And so I look at what the quarterback does in those spots, right? And if you like Baker Mayfield or you like Sam Darnold, you're going to be able to take on that young quarterback, and you've got like this blank canvas with which to build your team, because you've got all that money, you got the draft picks, you got all the rest of it. So those two are very attractive. And then you got the Green Bay Packers. And how often does it happen that a Hall of Fame quarterback, like a guy we know is going to be in the Hall of Fame, still in his athletic prime, because the range for athletic prime is different than it used to be. How often is it that guy's team is out looking for a coach? Doesn't happen very often, right? And whereas when you look at the Browns or the Jets, you see a young quarterback that you're going to be able to work with for a long period of time. In Green Bay, you say to yourself, if I can reach Aaron Rodgers, and that's a big if, okay? He can be a challenge to coach. But if I can reach Aaron Rodgers, then I got 5 years to find the next one. I got 5 years of probably have 5 years of excellent play. That's a nice runway for me to find the next one. And along the way, I can find the next one. I can pick and choose my spot on that. On top of that, I've got some money to spend, a promising first draft class from general manager Brian Gutekunst, and I've got two first-round picks. Remember, they've got the Saints' first-round pick as well. So those three jobs, they'll look at those three jobs, and the quarterback situations really enhance those jobs. Like, they'll really make those jobs attractive to suitors, where, again, if you're a guy like a John Harbaugh or an Adam Gase, you might get a little bit of a wandering eye. You might want to say, hey, you know, well, if they're not going to give me everything that I want here, those situations might make some sense. Okay, number four. We always talk about head coaching movement. I think the offensive coordinator movement is going to be very, very interesting, okay? I think you want to watch Todd Monken, the Bucs offensive coordinator. You want to watch Jim Bob Cooter, the Lions offensive coordinator. And you want to watch Nathaniel Hackett, the Jaguars offensive coordinator. All three of those guys have a reputation for innovation. All three of those guys have worked with quarterbacks. And all three of those guys are going to be available in a couple weeks, okay? Monken's on an expiring contract. Cooter's on an expiring contract, I'm told. And Nathaniel Hackett was fired, to some degree scapegoated in Jacksonville. And so seeing those three coaches, I think because of what's happened in the NFL over the course of the last 6 months, because of the explosion of offensive open-mindedness and innovation, we're going to see some potentially interesting coordinator movement. And so those are three of the names, but there will be some musical chairs going on in the NFL, and it's with teams with sitting head coaches. It could also be with a defensive candidate or two, like a Chris Richard from Dallas or Brian Flores from New England. One of these coaches, a Matt Eberflus from Indianapolis, a Dennis Allen from New Orleans. Some of these guys who could be head coaching candidates would do a good job to sell themselves with maybe somebody who's got some innovation in his resume and is available. And so the situation with offensive coordinator contracts is interesting to me. So write down Todd Monken's name, write down Jim Bob Cooter's name, write down Nathaniel Hackett's name. I think those three guys are among a group where you'll see some, because of what's happening in the NFL, you're going to see, I think, a priority put on those jobs. Finally, number five, I think college coaches are going to be in the mix this year. It doesn't mean they're going to get hired, but I think there's going to be a lot of interest in college coaches. And again, this goes back to the whole thing in the NFL now with innovation and what's happened in the NFL over the course of the last 6 or 7 months. I had a conversation with Lincoln Riley back in June, and he and I were talking about the idea that coaches come through there to study what Oklahoma's doing offensively. A couple of NFL people had told me that, so I called Lincoln Riley. And he said, you know what, in 2017, we probably had one or two NFL coaches come through and watch tape with me. He's like, in 2018, we had 27 or 28 teams that came through wanting to watch film with us. The reason why, we're seeing more innovation in the NFL. We're seeing more open-mindedness in the NFL. To me, it's one of the most interesting stories of 2018. We've seen it with Andy Reid, the same we've seen it with Sean McVay. An older coach who, on paper, maybe you'd think would be set in his ways, isn't. I mean, the stuff they're doing with Pat Mahomes, the stuff they did with Alex Smith before that, putting in Utah concepts for Alex Smith all those years, putting in Texas Tech concepts for Pat Mahomes, it's exploded. Sean McVay, some of the Cal stuff that he put in for Jared Goff. Well, here's what coaches are realizing. Coaches are realizing that there's some good stuff happening at the lower levels of the game that's applicable and isn't just quote-unquote college stuff, that isn't just quote-unquote gimmicky, that actually works, that's schematically sound, that they can come and they can take and they can import into the NFL. And so you're seeing that with those coaches. And because of the pipeline running a little dry at the NFL level, I think we're going to see teams with more curiosity than they generally have had in the past, looking to the college level. I think Lincoln Riley is the number one, and I'll say that again, number one candidate out there on the market, more so than any other coach. 35 years old, brilliant, knows how to run a program, knows how to reach kids, is able to reach kids from different backgrounds, was a great recruiter at Oklahoma, knows how to teach, all that stuff. I don't think he's leaving Oklahoma, but I think NFL teams are fascinated by him, and they should be. And that was borne out with the way that NFL teams rolled through Norman, Oklahoma last offseason. But he's not the only one. There are a couple guys that I think most people perceive won't leave their alma maters. Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, David Shaw at Stanford, both guys super respected as program builders, have great track records. You'd need a lot to get one of those guys out of those places because those guys love where they're at. They've got great job security. Again, they're coaching at their alma maters in areas that they're tied to. But those are two other names that I think you'll hear again this year. Matt Rhule from Baylor, there's another one. Matt Campbell from Iowa State, to me, is the real sleeper. Matt Campbell, I believe, will draw interest in places like Cleveland and the Jets. Great program builder, does more with less at Iowa State. Did a great job over the last few years at Iowa State, going toe-to-toe with the Texases and the Oklahomas of the world. And this is a little like Chip Kelly a few years ago. Now, you may remember when his name started to get on the radar and he was offered the Bucs job, and the next year he takes the Eagles job. A lot of people thought it was all about the blur offense and what they were able to do with the read option and all that different stuff. That wasn't really it. What it was that these scouts would roll through Eugene, Oregon, and they would come back to their NFL teams like they just saw Bigfoot. You got to see what they're doing at Eugene. You got to see what's going on at Oregon. It's unbelievable. It's a totally, totally different deal. And teams started to get interested. Oh, what's going on there? Like, there's a guy who maybe knows how to build a program. And they started to look into it, and they saw, you know, it was the tempo of practice. It was sports science stuff. It was managing sleep patterns. It was all of that crazy detailed stuff. And so Matt Campbell's sort of that guy now. Not that he's doing anything that's crazy different, but running a really tight program that people who go through there are impressed by. And so that'd be my last thing that I'd keep an eye on in the coming days. We may not hear a ton about it because college coaches have to be sensitive to recruiting, have to make everybody believe they're going to stay where they're at forever. But I think NFL teams quietly will kick tires on college coaches more than they have at any point over the last decade or so. So there are the five things that I think you want to kind of keep under your hat as we get closer to Saturday and Sunday and Monday with all the changes coming. One, some moves, I think some non-moves in places, some stays of execution for head coaches. Number two, I think the Dolphins have a lot of things to sort through over the course of the next couple of days. Number three, very rare quarterback situations as part of these jobs with Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, with Sam Darnold in New York, and with, in a different way, Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Number four, keep an eye on the offensive coordinator movement. I mentioned the names, Monken, Cooter, and Nathaniel Hackett. And then number five, college coaches are hotter than they've been in the recent past. Okay, so that's for all the fans of teams that are out of it and that are waiting to make changes. Now I want to give you guys a quick preview of what I'm going to be looking for in week 17 and the things that just really have piqued my interest. And, you know, a couple of them here, my first two are going to be sort of looking forward and looking to the future. And Titans Colts is so interesting because on one side, you've got a Titans team that's got a new head coach in Mike Vrabel and sort of this identity as a team that comes in and drags you into an alley and beats the crap out of you. And we've seen it. And if you watch the end of their games, you'll see this, the way people have made business decisions on tackling Derrick Henry, the way Derrick Henry has sort of become the model of who they are. Now, there are quarterback questions going forward there, but what I really liked about John Robinson when he came in was there was really an identity in what he was trying to build. His first draft pick was Jack Conklin, big offensive tackle from Michigan State. His second draft pick was Derrick Henry. They invested in the lines of scrimmage. Like, there was a real identity in what they wanted to build. And I think Mike Vrabel is taking that to the next level. So you have that, and then they're playing a Colts team, which, and I said it on Coward's show earlier this week, I think there's dynasty potential in Indianapolis. I think it's about the quarterback, Andrew Luck. I think it's about the draft class 2018, where they draft two starting linemen, Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith, with Pro Bowl potential. They draft the defensive rookie of the year or a candidate for it in Darius Leonard. They draft nice bit pieces in Kamiko Touré, the pass rusher, and Tyquan Lewis. They've got a receiver in that group who we haven't even seen yet because he tore his ACL, and Deion Kane. They got a couple of nice backs in Jordan Wilkins and Nyheim Hines. That draft class has a chance to be franchise changing. And you add that to what they drafted last year with guys like Marlon Mack and Malik Hooker. On top of that, they've got $100 million to spend next year, and they've got the Jets second round pick, which should be a top 35 pick. I think the Colts are rolling. I think they're only going to get better. And so this Titans-Colts game could portend things to come. Same with Browns-Ravens, right? Browns-Ravens, to me, like, you look at the Browns and where they're at. We already went through all the great things going on in Cleveland. They're 7-7-1. They've got a chance to play spoiler here with the Ravens. Baker Mayfield's there. There's a ton of young talent that's coming up through the pipeline there. They're positioned so well for the future. And then you have the Ravens, who have sort of reinvented their defense to some degree under Wink Martindale and have an exciting young quarterback in Lamar Jackson. So I'm so looking forward to this one, because on one side, you've got the Browns and Baker Mayfield and the energy and the juice he's brought to the table. And then on the other side, you've got the Ravens, who sort of recast themselves as Navy on offense with Lamar Jackson at quarterback and have so much innovation under Wink Martindale on defense. So those two games certainly stick out to me. Number three, Eagles-Redskins, for obvious reasons. This Nick Foles storyline is something else. I can't remember anything like it. And I think until the last few weeks, there was certainly, and I'll say it was me too. There was some perception out there that Nick Foles during the 2017 playoffs was lightning in a bottle. And what we've seen over the last 3 weeks is Nick Foles, not quite as hot as he was at the end of 2017, but Nick Foles is a stabilizing force in Philadelphia. And so I'm so interested now to see if they can finish the job against a Redskins team that played really tough against the Titans with Josh Johnson at quarterback. And so that game to me, the Eagles don't even control their own destiny. But that game to me is so interesting because you've got the Nick Foles element of it. And if Nick Foles plays well, let's just say Nick Foles plays well, let's say they win, but they don't get in the playoffs, right? Say the Vikings win and the Eagles are out. So the Eagles don't get in the playoffs. Like, the kind of interesting questions that could raise going forward, that's a fascinating, fascinating situation. Okay, number four, Rams-Niners. I just think that this is, for the Rams, so important to build as much momentum as they possibly can. You know, losing that game to the Eagles on Sunday night a week and a half ago, I think to some degree left a mark. We saw them come out and take care of business against the Cardinals. I think they need to put together a similar performance against the Niners. Important to get the bye week, of course, but I think just to restore the confidence and get it back to where it needs to be, it'd be nice for them to hit the ground running, because they're probably going to have to face the Bears in the second round. And the Bears obviously took them out behind the woodshed a couple weeks ago. And so I think for the Rams, this is an important confidence building opportunity against a team in the Niners that not only has been game, but played the opponent they're likely to play in the division round last week. And so just an important chance for the Rams to take care of business in a decisive way against a team that's going home after Sunday. And then the fifth thing to watch, Bears-Vikings is fascinating to me. And this is probably, I can't wait to watch Browns-Ravens, but Bears-Vikings is maybe the best game in the schedule from my perspective, because you're going to get a chance there to watch a Vikings team that couldn't have had higher expectations. I picked them to win the Super Bowl, but it's a Vikings team that couldn't have had higher expectations coming into the year, sort of fighting its way into the last week of the season. Now they control their own destiny. They're 8-6-1. They've reinvented themselves to some degree under a new offensive coordinator. And now there's this Bears team that has become the unexpected beast of the NFC North. And so on one side, you have like the presumptive favorite. And then on the other side, you've got a Bears team that came out of nowhere to run away with the division, to take the division with 3 weeks left. And this one, just the idea that the Vikings could like almost correct that in 1 week, it's fascinating to me. And I'm fascinated to see how the Bears handle this stage with still plenty on the line, because they can still play for a playoff bye there. Okay, we're going to get to your questions in just 1 second. But first, I want to tell you guys about Robinhood. I recently just signed up for it. It's fantastic, guys. It's an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Simple and intuitive. It's got a clear design with data presented in an easy-to-digest way. So, look, guys, I want to try to get you guys in on this. So, just tell you some of the values of downloading the app that I've been able to reap. First, the cost. There's no commission fees here. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees at all. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Second, the design of it, it's so easy to use. It's easy to understand. The charts, the market data, all of that's right there. You can place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. And the Robinhood web platform also allows you to view stock collections. So that's like your 100 most popular, your sectors, your entertainment, your social media, categories like female CEOs, all of that's right there for you. And you get analyst ratings of buy, hold, and sell for every stock. You can learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks and trade favorite companies with a personalized news feed. And you get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. So this is for you guys, okay? Robinhood is giving my listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. All you got to do, you can sign up at Breer. That's my last name, Breer.Robinhood.com. I'm telling you guys, my dad was a stockbroker. My dad worked at Merrill Lynch back in the 70s and 80s. My dad still trades stocks. And this is the way to do it here. That's why I signed up for it. One more time, that is Breer.com or Breer.Robinhood.com. Okay, we're going to get into the six-pack now. You guys know how that works. Every week on Tuesday, normally this week on Wednesday because of the holiday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. You ask, I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like. I hit that little heart on Twitter, and I give you an answer to your question. Question number one, this is from Jeremy Dodd. That's at SkinFan in OKC. Surely you and the rest of your media counterparts are well aware that the Redskin fans are sick and tired of Bruce Allen and the culture of the organization. Jeremy, I think that the one thing you want to keep an eye on here that is very important to the organization that may not be as important to you, especially because it looks like you live in Oklahoma City, the stadium project. I think one of the reasons why Bruce Allen is so important to Dan Snyder right now is because of the political capital he has in D.C., and getting that stadium built is a priority. Will that prevent him from hiring a personnel man? Well, the last time they went outside the organization to hire a personnel man, that was Scott McLuhan, and that didn't really work out. And so my guess is that until the stadium is built, or until the stadium deal is struck, Bruce Allen probably has a job in the organization. I'd heard the rumors earlier that he was going to Oakland. Right now, I don't see that happening. And so my guess is he's back in Washington in 2019. I think that also means that Jay Gruden is back in Washington in 2019. That dynamic we talked about you know, supply and demand, I think that comes into play here. And I think Jay Gruden's done a damn good job. You know, over the course of the last 5 years, I mean, you look at he's gotten them to the playoffs. He's been able to fight through a year like this year where they didn't fall off the table completely when I think a lot of other teams would have, going through four quarterbacks. I think Jay Gruden's the right guy for the job. I mean, that place has been a circus at so many different points over the course of the last 20 years. And we really don't think of it as much of a circus anymore. And I think that's a credit to the job that Jay Gruden's done. Number two, this is from RE at RE575929942. Do you think Kirk Cousins was worth the money? If not, was there a better option? I do think Kirk Cousins was worth the money. I think part of the problem is that you've got to support Kirk Cousins the right way. Kirk Cousins is like a lot of other quarterbacks. That is to say, he is very much as good as the people around him. And I think, to some degree, the way the 2018 Vikings were built, Case Keenum may have actually been a little bit of a better fit for the Vikings, the way that they were constructed. Here's why. The primary weakness of that offense is its line. Okay, if the primary weakness of your offense is your line, well, that's a problem for a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, who thrives on playing quarterback on schedule, who thrives on reading defenses, who thrives on playing the schematic game. Like, Kirk Cousins' strength is playing on schedule. Kirk Cousins' strength is playing in rhythm. And what you had before in Case Keenum was a player who thrives on playing off schedule, which is part of the reason why he was so good for them last year, because he was able to mitigate some of the issues you had on the offensive line. So I still think Kirk Cousins was worth the money. I think you have to find a way to invest in getting that offensive line better. Now, the good news is that this year's draft class, the second, third, fourth, fifth round, there are some good players there. I don't think the Vikings are lost from a young player perspective. They've got Elflein and O'Neal, two pretty promising young linemen who I think can be good players down the line. And so there could be light at the end of the tunnel. I know it hasn't been great in year one, but if you can get to a point where you can get Kirk Cousins playing on schedule and playing in rhythm, you're going to see a completely different player. Trust me on that. Question number three. This is from Panda87 at Lenski Menachem. How far would Nick Foles have to go in the playoffs for the Eagles to sign him and make him their starting quarterback next year? I'm going to say part of this is up to Nick Foles because he can buy his way out of that contract, and I think he'll be motivated to do just that because of the back-to-back seasons he's put together. There will be interest in him in at least a bridge quarterback type of role. The other thing you have to remember is that eventually you're going to have to pay Carson Wentz, and the Eagles' history, Howie Roseman's history, is to try to get guys done early to get a little bit of a discount. They did that with Lane Johnson. They did that with Zach Ertz. They've historically done that over the course of the last 20 years. And so on paper, at least, you would say this may be the time when they go and take care of Carson Wentz because this offseason is the first time that he's going to be eligible for a new deal. I think we also have to remember Carson Wentz is coming off the ACL. I don't get the sense there's any doubt in that organization that Carson Wentz is going to be their quarterback for the next 15 years. I think shutting him down was the right move. I understand why this question is coming up. I think it's going to be super interesting if Nick Foles plays really well because we're going to have a whole offseason to talk about the what if. What if Nick Foles was the starting quarterback the whole year? That said, I think they've got every reason in the world to believe in Carson Wentz, and I think Carson Wentz will be their starting quarterback next year. I think Nick Foles will be out there in the market with a guy like Joe Flacco vying for jobs as bridge quarterbacks in other places, and that may sound derogatory, but it's not. Guys who are in that position, look at how much they make. Tyrod Taylor is in that role, $16 million a year. Sam Bradford's in that role, $20 million a year. So you can make a lot of money, and you can play as a bridge quarterback in another spot. Question number four, this is from Michael Schultz. Will you please be the first media personality to talk about the Seahawks' strengths and weaknesses without once mentioning who no longer plays for the team? I'm not sure I've seen or heard one thing this year that doesn't include a list of all the guys who aren't there anymore. Sure, Michael, I will do that. The biggest strength that they have, is that they have rebuilt the identity that Pete Carroll and John Schneider set out to build in 2010 and 2011. What do I mean by that? They are running the ball better than anyone in the NFL. They've done that with two very good hires and bringing in Brian Schottenheimer and Mike Solari under the radar. Not all that popular when they made those two moves, but those moves have been gangbusters. They've reestablished the identity that they had with Marshawn Lynch there. That's sort of resonated throughout the team, and you see them playing fast, violent defense again. And so I think they've done a great job of, first of all, rebounding from a draft perspective. They've done a good job there and finding a way to build an offense around a running game one more time. I think it's made Russell Wilson more effective, and I think it's reopened the window to compete for championships. Pete Carroll deserves to be a candidate for Coach of the Year. Question number five from Gogo Tur. That's at Native FLA 99. I'm imagining that means you're a native Floridian. I also see your avatar has a tattoo in it, so that would be more evidence. Raiders next front office hire. Well, Dave Rosano's already there. Sean Harrock's already there. So there are two guys that I think the organization, the people internally that carry a big stick, and that means John Gruden, two guys that you already have that I think are going to be part of the solution. Will either of those guys be the general manager? I don't think so. But, you know, those would be two names to watch. And I think two names that might be considered. I think the choice would be, if he comes available, would be Cardinals general manager Steve Keim. I don't think he's going to come available at this point, but he's somebody that I think you would certainly see in the mix there if he were to come available. And then if it's not either of those guys, Jimmy Ray's name is one that's been mentioned to me. Brian Heimerdinger's name is another that's been mentioned to me. Guys who have some background with Gruden who would know how to set it up the way he'd want to set it up. Question number six, last question of the week from Jason Doyle. That's at Rabbit Doyle. What do the Jags do for their quarterback situation now that Herbert is going back to school? Is it Haskins and a veteran or bust? I think they aren't that far off. D is still good. Get a playmaking pass catcher, healthy O-line, etc. You're right. I don't think they're that far off. They have some cap issues they're going to have to work through, but they do have some good young players that they've built a core. They've built a foundation with. And again, like you may see a Malik Jackson or a Marcel Darius out because of the cap situation. Certainly Blake Bortles won't be back. But I think that there is a way to make this work without completely falling apart. I think they have to look at Dwayne Haskins, who's probably right now, him and David Jones from Duke, those two guys are probably the only two draft two first round type quarterbacks that'll be in this year's draft. So I think you look at those two. I think the best thing you can do is find a short term solution at quarterback, so you're not forced and pigeonholed into a single year where you have to take one. So that means maybe you sign Joe Flacco, maybe you sign Nick Foles, sign someone like that to a 2 or a 3 year deal at decent money, and a guy who can kind of help you tread water until you find your next guy. It's not ideal, of course, but that's the price you paid in getting it wrong on Blake Bortles. And so now I think the idea is, how do we buy ourselves some time? And so maybe you fall in love with Haskins. Maybe you fall in love with Jones. Possible. But if you don't, you want to at least give yourself the leeway where you're not mirroring yourself to a quarterback that you don't really believe in. Being pigeonholed into a single year, that's how a guy like Christian Ponder winds up going 12th overall. You don't want to be in that spot. So again, find a guy that you'd be comfortable with for 2 or 3 years and then start assessing the draft class. I appreciate you guys coming out. Again, this is a rare solo performance. Jenny and Connor will be back next week. I would love all the feedback that you have for us. Again, it's going to be 2019 the next time we talk to you, and we want to make this your podcast. And the best way to do that is to get me on my Twitter page at Albert Breer, on my Facebook page at Albert R. Breer, on my Instagram at Albert_Breer. We take your suggestions. We'll try to apply them as we can, especially as we get into playoff time. And then, of course, we'll be rolling right from there into the draft cycle and free agency. We want to make this your podcast. So, again, the best way to do that is to listen to you. And I can't listen to you unless you're talking to me. You can do that through my social media channels. And always, always, always remember to listen to the MMQB podcast family. We are all in one feed now, the MMQB NFL podcast. That's Gary and Andy's twice weekly podcast. That's the gambling podcast. And that's this podcast every single week with me and Jenny and Connor. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. Jenny, Connor, and I will see you then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.